For Michel Barnier, negotiating with the Tories will have seemed a breeze compared with his short stint as French Prime Minister. The EU's former Brexit negotiator on the cusp of watching his minority government fall to the hands of Parliament, a first in this country since 1962. It was always going to be an uphill battle to pass a budget while so far outnumbered by an opposition that goes from the far right to the far left. We'll ask what the 73-year-old conservative could have done differently and whether it's all down to an unpopular president who hopes his political luck could carry him from Wednesday's conclusion of a state visit to Saudi Arabia to Saturday's reopening of Notre Dame without drawing too much attention during this major institutional crisis, a crisis of Emmanuel Macron's own making, argue critics. After 7 years in power, the French president inexplicably called snap elections that, instead of giving his center-right bloc a majority, brought Marine Le Pen's far-right closer than ever to power. He's still got 2 years to go. So is it too soon to ask if this perhaps marks the start of Macron's twilight? Today in the France 24 debate, we're looking at the fall of France's government with a socialist member of the French Senate, Hélène Conway-Mouret. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you.
Thanks as well to Damien Lecomte, political science researcher at Paris Panthéon Sorbonne University.
Thank you.
We welcome back Richard Verly, France correspondent and columnist for Swiss publication Blick. How are you?
Good evening, François. I'm fine.
Good. And journalist Léa Chamboncel, the host of the French politics podcast, Popol, author of More Women in Politics. Good to see you.
Nice to see you too. Thank you.
Your reactions on the hashtag F24 debate. It took nearly 2 months for Emmanuel Macron to name a prime minister. It will have taken another 2 months for Michel Barnier to fall at the outset of voting on next year's budget. The motion of no confidence expected very shortly. Oliver Farrey has more.
Jumping into the unknown. That is how multiple French papers have put it. With two no-confidence votes looming over Prime Minister Michel Barnier, he and his ministers could very well no longer be in power come Wednesday. For that to happen, either one of the two motions, be it the one called by the far right or the one by the far left, would need to pass Parliament, and by a majority vote. Put forth on Monday after Barnier forced through a social security law, such no-confidence motions can only be voted on by law 48 hours after they've been called. But already the necessary votes on the far right and on the left are said to be there, upping the likelihood that Barnier will be ousted.
We have always said that this is not the left's motion. The votes of no confidence tabled are motions of no confidence in the government.
Confronted with this umpteenth denial of democracy, we will censor this government. And Michel Barnier will go down in history as the prime minister with the shortest mandate in the Fifth Republic.
If Barnier's government does fall, what then would happen on the political front in France? While it remains the great unknown, as the newspapers called it, Emmanuel Macron's entourage says that the French president is already working on a replacement. It is his constitutional imperative to name the prime minister. But who and on what side of the political spectrum? On the right, he could name Barnier again or pick another conservative politician. Or he could select someone on the left, such as former Prime Minister and socialist Bernard Cazeneuve. He was on the shortlist back in September. Or knowing that any of his choices will be faced with a splintered parliament and the risk of being ousted as well, he could also name a technocratic government while he waits for future legislative elections. That can't be called until 1 year after the previous ones that Macron called, or not until July 2025. The final option is stepping down, as some politicians left, right and center have called for. Even if he said he won't step down, Emmanuel Macron could indeed resign, which would in turn provoke a snap presidential election.
Emmanuel Macron's ruled out that last option. Hélène Conway-Mouret, markets today pretty stable. Is there a crisis? Is this a big crisis? How big a crisis?
Well, there is a political crisis, obviously, as you rightly said. You know, it's kind of unknown. We're trying to deal. We have a lot of constitutional lawyers telling us, you know, the various options as to what we can do. It's just a time of the year, which is very problematic because we're in the middle of debating the budget and deciding on next year's budget. And this is absolutely crucial. So if that had happened at another time, we could have had, you know, a resigning government for a while, as was the case in the spring, and we could have lived with it. But now we actually absolutely need to have a budget voted at some point, early next year maybe, if we don't have a government for a few months. But we do need it.
Would you have voted the motion of no confidence if you'd
personally,
been in the Lower House?
Personally, I would not. I would not, because I feel that it's just, you know, the situation is just so chaotic at the moment that by having a government going, being replaced by who, to do what, with a National Assembly which is not going to be changed for another 6 months, at least, you know, with three blocs that have proved to be totally unable to speak to each other or have some kind of agreement, so that instead of having three blocs and one of them blocking, you know, if they want, which is the case today, having two of them making a majority, but they were unable to do it because it's not in the French tradition to have these kind of coalition governments or these kind of compromises. We work more in the Senate that way, and where we find compromises, and we do have unanimous votes in a lot of texts, simply because we have given each party or each part what they're looking for, and then it works. But in the National Assembly, it is not the tradition. So I really don't see what we're going to gain by having to change Monsieur Barnier for somebody else, unless maybe the new government is capable of maybe being a bit more open, which Monsieur Barnier has not been, and that has been the disappointment with him, really, that we thought, you know, having negotiated the Brexit, that he was going to be able to negotiate with everybody, which was what he had said he was going to do. But in fact, he didn't. So beyond that disappointment, I kind of feel, you know, if we vote the budget and then maybe we could have changed the government, that would have been right. But I don't think it's what's going to happen. So
so lots to criticize in the method of the current prime minister at this point, Léa Chambon said. But Hélène Conway-Mouret saying the timing is wrong. Do you take her point?
I do understand the point, obviously. But the thing is that it's the first bill that the National Assembly has to vote for this government, basically. And I think the biggest mistake so far from the government of Barnier is not having dealt beforehand and before actually voting this text with all the coalition. What we usually do in politics when it comes to parliamentary regime, like we have in Germany, at some point a lot of people were making the parallel when Barnier was appointed with Germany, how the coalition work in like northern countries, also Scandinavia. They have an agreement. They make a coalition agreement, and this can take weeks, if not months, at some point. But then at the end, the government stays in power.
Let's talk about the timeline.
With the government, and they had no agreement.
Right, because Emmanuel Macron loses, just for our viewers to understand, loses the elections on July the 7th. Mm-hmm. The prime minister is named on September 5th.
Yep.
When should these German-style negotiations that you tout, when should they have started?
Well, instead of taking about 2 months before choosing, appointing a prime minister, maybe he should have taken these 2 months to actually talk about, and all the compromises that you were talking about earlier is indeed something that you need to be considering when you come up with a coalition, which he didn't consider at all. He was like, I need to appoint someone that's going to be doing the job. And today he's relatively, you know, quite quiet. He's traveling. He's not being very loud on what's going on the political scene, not commenting anything. I mean, he's really backing off. And I think this is a big mistake.
Did you see that, Richard Verli, how Léa seamlessly went from talking about Michel Barnier to talking about Emmanuel Macron? Is Macron the one who made the mistake here?
Well, Macron is definitely responsible for what is happening now. He is responsible because he has dissolved the National Assembly on the assumption that he will win the election. And he lost. And he did not acknowledge the fact that he lost. And not only that, he did not look first to the winner of this legislative election, which was the coalition of the left. I am not saying that it was compulsory for him to nominate a candidate from the left. I'm just saying in a normal parliamentary country, he would have first looked to that part of the political spectrum.
But there were overtures made to former Prime Minister Bernard Cazeneuve, who's from the Socialists.
Well, he received Bernard Cazeneuve, but he did not offer Bernard Cazeneuve the premiership. Or at least he did not say, Emmanuel Macron never said publicly, I offered Bernard Cazeneuve the premiership. So, and in addition to that, he said, the president, that for him, La France Insoumise, the Mélenchon party, was off-limit, that he did not want them in a government. So he did not play it as you normally play in a parliamentary country. You go to look for the winner. You see what the winner can produce in terms of coalition. If they are unable to produce a satisfactory coalition, then you look for an alternative. Yeah. That's exactly what happened in Spain. In Spain, the Conservative Party was the winner. The king first asked them to see if they could form a coalition. They were not able to do so. So he turned to Pedro Sanchez, who managed to do one with the Catalan, the Autonomist Party. So what I'm saying is Emmanuel Macron has made many mistakes. But the French voters are also very responsible, because the result of the election is democratic. So what I did not like is that a lot of commentators were not happy about the fact that Macron dissolved the National Assembly, but this was a democratic move. He gave to the French voters the possibility to send a new National Assembly. And the fact of the matter today is that France is completely divided. And can you continue to exclude from government, I'm just asking the question, the two parties that are Le Rassemblement National on the one hand, populist, national populist, and La France Insoumise, radical left on the other hand. Can you continue to exclude these two parties? Because they are the ones who are toppling Barnier government today. They are the ones who make this censorship
motion.
The
socialists are also voting against
them. Socialists are also voting, but at the moment they are kind, sorry, madame, under the tutelage of La France Insoumise, at least in the National Assembly, maybe not in the Senate. So if you want to recompose the political landscape in France, can you continue, I repeat, to avoid those two parties? I have my doubts.
Damien Lecomte?
I do think also that the vote or the motion of no confidence tonight is the result of the political choice of Emmanuel Macron to have a government that is relying on the national rally to survive. Right. Because indeed, he has consistently refused to turn to the left, to the left wing.
And yeah, he made concessions coalition on this Social Security bill to the far right, but not to the left.
Not to the left wing. And if you refuse to work with the left-wing coalition, who was the winner of the legislative election? It is the coalition that is the most numerous in the National Assembly, even if they are far from absolute majority. If you refuse to work with them, you have to have a minority government that is relying on the national rally. And so Barnier was dependent on the changing strategies of Marine Le Pen.
All right, Damien Lecomte, the last time Parliament brought down the French government, 1962, General de Gaulle decided to amend what was then a brand new constitution to allow for direct universal suffrage to elect the president. The centre-left-led parliament ousted the then Prime Minister Georges Pompidou. Snap elections were called. The Gaullists won a whopping majority. Pompidou returned as PM. The rest is history. Is this just something for the History Channel we're looking at? There's nothing to be learned from that because politics have changed so much.
Yeah, the situation is very different. And the first difference, of course, is that this time the president cannot dissolve the National Assembly. Yeah. This National Assembly is going to stay in place at least until next summer. So wherever the president appoints as prime minister after Michel Barnier, even if he renew Michel Barnier like General de Gaulle renewed Georges Pompidou, the next prime minister is going to have to deal with the current National Assembly.
All right, just before the vote, Barnier's predecessor as prime minister come leader of Macron's party in parliament wagged an accusatory finger at the collective opposition.
At a time when the global economic outlook is downgrading, where Donald Trump has just been re-elected president of the United States, France needs stability. What's playing out here, what's playing out before us, is a situation where the socialists, with France unbowed, the National Rally, the communists, and the ecologists are going to pool their votes to plunge our country into the unknown. It's irresponsible.
Léa Chamboncel, it's irresponsible?
I don't know. I don't think so. I don't think so, because it was the risk that Macron took by appointing, as we said earlier, a prime minister that in the end has only 49 members of the parliament that comes from the same party as him. We need to remind this. I mean, the political party of Michel Barnier is Les Républicains, and today there are only 49 members of them sitting at the parliament. So it was obvious that at some point what is going to happen, obviously, tonight was about to happen, because it was a total bet to say, all right, we're not going to try to make a government with the coalition that actually won the election. That was a pretty clear choice, indeed. And then we're going to appoint a prime minister from a minority party in the assembly, and we're going to add a few from our coalition, from our members. I mean, it was quite obvious when he came with the argument, like the main argument of Macron was saying, I am appointing Barnier because it's obvious that he's the only one to be able to make stability, to make sure we have stability in this country. Well, the result is that he said no to Lucie Castex, considering that she will be facing a motion of no confidence as soon as the budget will be voted. I mean, there we go. And Barnier is doing exactly the same. You know, he's facing as much risk.
Okay, but Barnier is not just anybody. He was a former state superintendent. He knows how the workings of government are. He's a former minister, a former European commissioner, Brexit negotiator.
Yeah.
He had credentials.
But, you know, he didn't have credentials from the French people.
Mm.
Hélène Conway-Mouret?
Yeah, he had those credentials. And we thought initially that if he put all that experience, you know, to work, that maybe coming from a minority party, relying on a minority government, because you rightly said, those that were picked did not belong to the majority groups.
At all.
So that was going to be unstable anyway. But I think I just want to come back to the point of the three blocs. We had a Republican front, you know, for the vote. Mm. Without that, I think the Rassemblement National would have had an overall majority. So that was avoided, okay? But it didn't go beyond those who actually made sure that the Rassemblement National was not going to have an overall majority and therefore be called government, did not come together to continue with that Republican front. And I think that's what's missing today. And if there is a snap election, or not a snap election, if there is another election in, you know, next July or whatever, I really don't see the point of Emmanuel Macron calling for the dissolution of the National Assembly, replaying exactly the same scenario with maybe a Republican front not coming, to play in the same way, and having to live the last year of his mandate with Marine Le Pen or Bardella or whatever as a prime minister, because they will have an overall majority. So I really don't see that he will be dissolving. It is not in his interest. I mean, to mark history, to be, you know, having the first extreme right in government under the end of his mandate, second mandate. And so I see that we are kind of in a, you know, we are in an impasse, really. I really don't see the point of all of these things, unless those who have this Republican, you know, feeling in them feel that they can come together. And yes, they do not want the extreme right.
I just wanted to add something, sorry, on the Republican front.
The analysis that I have at this point.
If I may.
Just one point about it, because I want to, following up on that, Richard Verli earlier saying, it's one thing to put a firewall around the far right. It's one thing to put a firewall around the far left. You can't put a firewall around both if you're trying to build a coalition.
But it's the far right. Yeah, but it's the far right today, which is a majority, not the far left. Look at M. Mélenchon's polls.
So you agree that Macron should have negotiated with Mélenchon?
Mélenchon's polls are going down, and they didn't actually win, you know, the last poll, which was the European election. So look at those results, whereas the National Front did.
Yeah.
I just wanted to add something on the national, on the Front Républicain, Republican Front. What's very interesting is that Les Républicains, for that sake, so the Prime Minister Michel Barnier, that is his party, didn't call for that Republican Front. Most of the people that were running for the election under the label of this party didn't actually play that game.
Well, they had a splinter,
and now,
unlike
today,
the radical left, participated in the Republican.
Yeah, And they did. Yes. And who's governing today? Yeah. The one that didn't play the game. So exactly. It's absurd.
You know, it happens that I'm coming from a country where you have a parliamentary system.
Yep.
And in Switzerland, we even have a government, a federal government, which brings in the major party at the National Assembly. And I do not think at the moment, especially considering what Hélène Conway-Mouret just said, the fact that the Rassemblement National is on the rise, and every polls show that if there would be an election today, they would probably gain a lot of MPs. I have my doubts about the possibility of continuing to exclude them from government. Now, the only way to continue to exclude them from government, if you consider that we should not give the power to these people and to this party, is to unite the rest of the political parties. That's the only way. So that means accepting to have La France Insoumise, the radical left, in a government. So it's very clear there is no other option to have a majority anti-Rassemblement National. Otherwise, the alternative is the conservative government comes in power, and this conservative government opens its door to the Rassemblement National, and we have some kind of Italian formula with the extreme right in the government.
And we shall be careful with the polls, because the polls didn't show in July that NFP will win the election.
Marine Le Pen, who earlier had her turn among all the party bloc leaders at the rostrum of the National Assembly.
Toujours plus d'impôts, et pourtant.
Always more taxes for fewer public services, for less social protection.
De la politique du pire.
The worst policy would be to not censor such a budget, such a government, such a collapse. The institutions force us to mix our votes with those of the far left, and we're not doing it with joy in our hearts.
All right, so we're holding our noses and voting with the left. She also goes on, Richard Varley, in that speech to say, I tell those who suffer and despair the days no longer far for the great change, a great change that will be synonymous for all the French with deliverance. What does she mean by deliverance?
Well, she's taking a real political risk because she has decided, I mean, she will, we don't know yet, because I think the vote is soon taking place. She is going to vote with the radical left, so with the enemy, the declared enemy of the Rassemblement National. And as you said rightly, Le Nouveau Front Populaire, the coalition of the left, actually won by a narrow margin the last legislative election. So she's betting on the fact that the winds are in her favor. The political winds with Trump in the US, with what we see in Europe, they are blowing in her favor. But she also act under constraint, which is the constraint on her own judiciary case, because she is on trial for using parliamentary assistance from the European Parliament, and she may become ineligible, and we will know that at the end of March, on the 31st of March. So she has to run very quickly with the hope, I believe she will not get it, that Macron may resign before that date. So that's what she's trying to do, running on the one hand and keeping the wind to blow in her favor and hoping that politically she will be able to surf that wave.
Let's go live to the National Assembly, just show you images now, because in the last minutes, Michel Barnier, the last seconds, Michel Barnier has finished his speech. He's gotten a big round of applause from his, what they now call the central bloc, the center-right that is supporting his government. And you see the lawmakers making their way out. The vote is expected next at the National Assembly. Damien Lecomte, you heard Richard Verli there talk about the Italian scenario, where you have coalitions now where the once mighty conservatives of the late Silvio Berlusconi are just a minority partner in a coalition led by the far-right's Giorgia Meloni. Is France headed towards coalitions that bring in the far-right?
I think that the far-right is clearly on the rise, and What is interesting is that Marine Le Pen is, I believe, politically, she's torn between, first, her wish to make the nationality look more respectable, more moderate, more able to govern, and on the other hand, she has also to meet the expectation of a more radical base that is more anti-system, more willing to overturn the government, and that is why she has tried to make like she was reaching a deal with the government, but she consistently added new terms to the deal in order to eventually overturn the government. And clearly she is hoping that the political crisis that is going to happen might work in her favor. And also, I agree, obviously she is hoping that the president will resign before she is made ineligible by the justice.
All right. And it's thanks to the Wi-Fi in the presidential plane that Emmanuel Macron will hear the result of that vote of no confidence that's expected. He's going to be touching down from Saudi Arabia, where he's been for the past 2 days for a state visit. He's also attended a water summit. Interesting to note that Macron is kind of hoping that, you know, he's going to have a rough couple of 48 hours in Conway Mouet. And then on Saturday, there's going to be world leaders arriving, including the U.S. president-elect, by the way, who are going to be there for the reopening of Notre Dame. Is that political luck that Macron has this event that's going to make him look good, no matter what you say on the world stage?
Yes, exactly. And I think, unfortunately, images today are extremely important, you know. I mean, people are on TikTok. Look at what happened in Romania. You know, this guy, unknown 3 months ago, who gets 30% in the polls simply because he went on TikTok, pushed by the Russian, who made a very good campaign for him. And so, you know, there is this kind of this immediate kind of information where we move from one event to another. And I think somehow maybe he counts on people forgetting quickly and moving on to something else, except that I go back, and sorry, because we've been working on it for the past 6 months preparing that budget, that if it is not voted, we could have a lot of social unrest in the spring. You know, I come back to that. So I think he will be caught up very quickly by the reality of having to point somebody quickly as prime minister. Apparently he has a few names in mind. Having a government formed not in 2 months' time, but so that, you know, we may be able to, we've worked on the very scenario now as to how we will proceed with the continuation of the discussions on the budget or not, whether we get the projet de loi de finance de la sécurité sociale,
social security
back,
bill for next year,
back into the Senate. So, you know, we are kind of focused on that. Maybe because, I don't know, we're thinking about the country and then, you know, all these political games and indeed Marine Le Pen's agenda. I mean, it's
Marine Le Pen, who, by the way, has said that she will be in favor of approving through special laws the next year's budget.
Yes, that's one option. It's Article 47. Yeah, we have three different options. The you know, the president can actually decide that he will use special powers that he has.
That's so the that nuclear option, Article 16 that he of the will, Constitution.
Well, yeah, but he will impose the budget. It can be also not voted by, passed by ordinance, or indeed special law that for first step, we just use the 2024 budget for next year until we have a rectified budget that we vote when new government is in place. So there is no shutdown.
It's not
that at all.
States.
But at the same time, if there was a kind of a continuation as to what we have now, because I understand also that there is kind of fear that if some savings are not made, interest rates may be on the rise. I mean, you know, our finance committee has explained all of that to us. And I think the French people will not actually like to see the rest of Europe having lower interest rates and France having the only one being the only ones that have interest rates going up and, you know, not having grants being paid on the 1st of January or all the increases that people are entitled to. They will be looking for that in January, you know, very quickly if that's not passed. So
what's the reasonable option, realistic option, if you will, for getting a budget over the line?
I have no idea. I'm not governing, and I'm far from that, and I'm quite happy I'm here tonight and not at the National Assembly, to be honest. I haven't.
I'm
honestly
glad to be in the Senate.
You're right. Honestly, it's an interesting situation because it's very hard to estimate what Macron is going to be doing. He's not showing much interest, as we were saying, like being very busy on like international affairs, which is often what French presidents do when they lose popularity. You know, like on the national level, they will focus more on international affairs. So, I don't know what will be the most reasonable, but if I were the French president, I believe I would try at least to make a coalition with the people that won the election at some point, because this is the most reasonable choice. Also, because we don't have just a political crisis, we have a democratic crisis.
Right.
Because, you know, like there were snap elections. We called people to go out to vote. The mobilization was incredible. Like for the first time in like years and decades,
turnout
was huge. For what? For the result of not having the people they actually voted for being governing the country? I mean, this is like very, very hard to understand. And now the mistrust again towards politics and politicians in general in France is huge. And there is like reason for that, and Macron is responsible for that.
We showed those archive images earlier of the of 1962. This is a constitution that was molded by General de Gaulle, and France is a country where the president has much more power than elsewhere inside of Western Europe. In a long-form piece that describes the increasing isolation at the presidential palace these days, the French broadsheet of record Le Monde describes how Macron's inner circle is spinning it all. The fateful musketeers maintain the narrative of an unavoidable dissolution of parliament to avoid the vote of no confidence over the budget that was going to be brewing anyway in the fall, and the electoral rout, far worse than the one of July 7th, that would have followed. Dr. Verli, care to present a psychological opinion here? Because I've noticed on social media the last couple of days, a lot of people have been offering diagnoses for a president, again, who has a lot of power, and it's anyone's guess what's in his head.
Well, I think what was in his head was to play poker and to win. He thought that by surprising everybody, probably first of all, he was very angry at losing the European election. Him, Emmanuel Macron, the
pro-European
president.
So it was an act of spite.
I think it was an act of defiance to the French voters, saying, you have brought the Front National, the Rassemblement National, sorry, again on top, and it is just unacceptable. So he wanted to go back to the voter and says, and that was his own words. I was there at the press conference that he had a few days after June 9, and he said, responsibility. I'm giving you the responsibility. What he did not figure out, for the majority of French voters, responsibility is not voting for Macron anymore. Is voting either for the Rassemblement National or for the different parties. So now what he can do, I suspect that he would go for some kind of technical government solution because it permits the budget one way or another to be adopted, probably through this special law that Marine Le Pen has said she will approve. And that will give him some pause. This technical government can run until spring. And then he can see how things move and eventually decide to dissolve the National Assembly again.
Because, but you heard it in Conway Mouret say, if he dissolves it again, it's just going to be the
same.
Yeah,
but he may, you know, poker. Yeah. You lose and then you try again. That's it. That's how it works.
But I'm not sure.
But now, is there anyone, and maybe Madame Conway Mouret has a better idea than I have, is there anyone in the French political landscape, any personality today capable of, let's say, enlarging the coalition that Barnier had? The coalition that Barnier had was not large enough. We have the proof today. We will have the proof once the no confidence motion is voted. Is there someone who can enlarge it? Can François Bayrou, the centrist leader, do it? because his name has surfaced. Can Sébastien Lecornu, the present Ministry of Defense, Minister of Defense, do it? Personally, I do not see anyone at the moment in position to enlarge such a coalition from the right to La France Insoumise.
So, Damien Lecomte, does Emmanuel Macron limp along for the remainder 2 years and a little bit of his mandate? He's term limited. Or, you know, 2 years is a long time and he's got time to rebound from all of this.
Everything can happen, but right now there is no clear solution because in the last 2 years, since 2022, all the budget has been adapted by the infamous Article 49.3 of the Constitution.
Yeah, that turns bills into decrees and votes of no confidence.
It turns
it as an
issue of confidence. And yeah.
Well,
so
the National Assembly doesn't vote.
And tonight it seems that it's not going to work. So whoever is appointing Prime Minister after Michel Barnier will have to pass a finance bill and a social security bill with the vote of a National Assembly, so he will have to build a compromise in this National Assembly. And I think that in the last hours, we have heard some names, indeed, Sébastien Lecornu, François Bayrou, Bruno Retailleau, the very conservative Minister in Interior.
And the return of Jean Castex.
All these names suggest that Emmanuel Macron is going to try again this center-right coalition relying on the far right. But I think if we want to respect the result of a snap election, that is, we have all said that a victory of the Republican Front is going at one point or another to try to make compromises with the left wing that won the election with a very narrow margin, but is the most numerous coalition in the National Assembly. As long as he refuses to really discuss with the left wing and to acknowledge that they are the first coalition, he's going to be dependent on the National Right.
Hélène Conway-Mouret, it's a marriage of convenience on the left right now. At what point does the Socialist Party break ranks with the far left and perhaps take the outstretched hand? Would they be amenable? Would you be amenable to some kind of a coalition?
I think, you know, there has been on the left this notion that we need to have the one candidate for a presidential election. And I think that Monsieur Mélenchon is very much working on that, thinking that it is obviously himself.
The leader of France on ballot.
Yes, that it is obviously himself. So we have a problem both with Marine Le Pen, who has her personal agenda, and Jean-Luc Mélenchon, who has exactly the same. Both would like the president to resign, as both believe that they will be in a position to run against each other. And Monsieur Mélenchon bets that, you know, there will be that reflex that has worked so far, because it has been used since François Mitterrand, really, you know, having the Le Pen family there as the candidate, you know, arriving in the second round and being sure to be elected. And Emmanuel Macron has used that, you know, to his profit on two occasions, certainly the second time. So it's very difficult today to see how the extreme right and the extreme left, and you were talking about LFI, will actually want to have a kind of another way towards, you know, trying to have a new setup and whatever. I don't think it will work because of the two figures, the two.
But my question
leaders.
To you was that would you consider? Would you think the socialists should consider?
Yeah,
dropping the alliance.
But the socialists had no way,
because they're still in alliance with France.
I know,
unbowed, with
but they had no other way but to enter in a coalition on the left, to have this bloc, to be, you know, regaining, you know, some strength because of, you know, the polls that were quite atrocious a few years ago, and be in a position to actually have some weight and, you know, count in the discussions. So the socialists have retained the major cities, you know, there are a lot of elected socialists, you know, at the regional level, departmental level, you know, cities and so on. But at the national level, they don't do that well, and they need to be part of a coalition. And at the moment, it is LFI that has gained a lot of ground, especially, you know, in the banlieue, because they are very kind of communitarist, which we are not. So there are a lot of frictions because of different visions of you know, what we are. And the socialists have never been kind of a partner with the extreme left. In fact, you know, it was with the communists, you know, It was a mariage forcé sometimes, you know, but it was
necessary. I mean, there have been instances in the past, as you say. But, so yeah. When you talk coalition, just to be clear, you mean coalition?
Well, I'm just thinking about François Mitterrand, you know, who obviously had to go with the communists to be elected, and it did work, but then he got rid of the communists once elected, you know. So in the left, I think you have these parties that come together to win, that have, if you like, a socle, which is, I don't know what it is in English now.
A base.
A base which is common, on which they can build, but then they have differences.
They have differences, but they came up with a whole program, actually, for the election, yes. So they can manage to have that base.
Yes, exactly. That base is solid, but mm-hmm. then the differences kind of come to light when...
It's mostly a matter of people than ideas.
Well, that's what I was trying to explain, that, you know, we have these two figures, and if you extract Jean-Luc Mélenchon, then...
Well, then you have to extract Hollande, then you have to extract Cazeneuve, many...
Cazeneuve is not socialist in the Socialist Party anymore.
Is not that much dominated that by the radical left, as we are used to say on the New Popular Front, because in the New Popular Front, actually, the radical left of Jean-Luc Mélenchon and the Socialist Party are practically even in the National Assembly. And I think the Socialists have no real interest, nor electorally, nor policy-wise, to be the auxiliaries of Emmanuel Macron's coalition. So if they are going to split the Popular Front, they are going to be junior partner of Emmanuel Macron, and that is not in the nor electoral or policy interests. So the radical left participated in the Republican Front, and so if you want to discuss with the left, you have to accept that the Popular Front is a world coalition.
I do agree on that. I think the reality, if today the Socialist Party, of which Madame Conway-Mouret is a member, if they decide to go into a coalition with the central party of Emmanuel Macron, they save Emmanuel Macron mandate. They will be the ones saving the end of Emmanuel Macron mandate. And all the rest of the left will label them for doing so. So it's a very difficult position. Now you have one alternative. You know, you actually have two. First alternative is that Emmanuel Macron finally makes what he should have done. It's go to the Nouveau Front Populaire as a group and telling them, let's try. What can you produce in terms of government? Maybe there will be another no confidence motion, but at least he will try. The second option is that he gives something big to the Socialist Party, something that they can say they won. What is it? Retirement and pension reform. If Emmanuel Macron says to the Socialist Party, now, I am ready to back off on the retirement pension reform, and you will be able to tell your voters that you got that, then maybe they will go.
But he's got to give them something. One quick final question, because we're out of time. Richard Verli, on Saturday, when you see that photo op between Emmanuel Macron and the president-elect of the United States, Donald Trump, at Notre Dame, how will that play domestically here in France?
Well, behind Donald Trump, you will see Marine Le Pen. That's the wind that brought Donald Trump to Notre Dame is the wind Marine Le Pen hopes to get in order to be at the Élysée Palace. That's the plain truth.
I'll have to leave it there for now, unfortunately. I want to thank you, Richard Verli, Léa Chamboncel, Hélène Conway-Mouret, Damien Lecomte. Thank you for being with us here in the France 24 debate.